You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. The current rock hero biopic trend continues with Rocket Man, an intimate and honest fantasy about the life of Elton John. Starring Taron Egerton as the musical icon, the film frames itself in the context of a therapy session, allowing John to explore his past and how it has driven him to superstardom, demons and all. This week, Jolie Featherstone of TO Film Files and Screenfisher Julie Levac joins us to tackle the film's examination of mental health, the complexities of censorship, and what it means to be loved properly. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are thrilled that you could join us this week to talk about Rocket Man, the new biopic of Elton John starring Taron Egerton. And this week we have a Screenfish newbie and a Screenfish veteran, I guess. Julie Levac and Jolie Featherstone from Toronto Film Files. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad that you could both be here. Rocket Man is the 2019 biographical musical fantasy film. I love that description. Based on the life of Elton John, directed by Dexter Fletcher and written by Lee Hall. And the film takes us through the early life of famed musician Elton John, beginning with his childhood, as we see his formative years up until his time in rehab. Or is it? Because is the timeline as static as they say? I don't know, because it is a musical fantasy film. And anyway, I'm going to ramble. But it does follow the early days as a prodigy at the Royal Academy of Music to his musical partnership with Bernie Taupin. And it is titled after his famous 1972 song. So, ladies, though, what do you think of Rocket Man?
I loved it so much. It just exceeded my expectations. This is what Bohemian Rhapsody wasn't. Do you know what I mean? I didn't know it was a musical, actually. I kind of went in with no expectations, and once they started doing one of the musical scenes, I was pleasantly surprised. It wasn't cheesy at all. I think they just nailed it. Cinematically, it was stunning. And they call it a fantasy. That's exactly what it is. It's like the fantasy, almost like a dystopian fantasy of Elton John's life. It was incredible.
Yeah, I'm definitely with Julie on that. I personally really, really enjoyed this film. Just that word fantasy, that's what really drew me to seeing it. When I initially saw the trailer a few months back, I loved the description of based on a true fantasy. I loved how they kind of explored this time in his life through the lens of, of course, typical biopic structure, but they do play with that a little bit, and that fantastical element that they bring to it, I personally loved it.
Yeah, this movie was terrible. No, I'm kidding. I'm with you, ladies. I really enjoyed it. And see, now I'm not as hard on it as saying it's what Bohemian Rhapsody wasn't, but it was very different than Bohemian Rhapsody, which, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Dexter Fletcher was involved in.
Really? I believe he had a writing credit for that.
I was going to say, did he write that film? I think he did.
Huh. You know what? I think it's unfair of me to compare the two because they are quite different. I just feel like I went into Bohemian Rhapsody with much higher expectations. Right. And maybe, although I was excited for Rocket Man, I don't think that I, had massive expectations about it. But honestly, it's just Bohemian Rhapsody was good. It wasn't great, in my opinion. Rocket Man was fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the connection, by the way, is that when Singer was let go, based on the controversy around Singer, Dexter Fletcher was brought in to continue it, but he didn't get the direction credit because most of it was Singer's work. So Fletcher actually helped finish the film. And I actually heard at one point that when he was developing this, he considered having Rami Malek as a cameo.
Oh my gosh.
To come in.
Oh,
it's a 70s rock star cinematic universe. I guess we need that. And, but
I mean, that could have been a fun scene, to be honest.
It would have been so out of place, but it could have happened.
Yeah, I think your toughest critic would probably rip it to shreds if that actually happened.
It would be, you know, yeah. No, I am with you on that. It would be fun, though.
You know what I liked about this one is that, you know, comparing it to Bo Rap, because, it, I mean, it really... They're going to be compared because we're coming off of Rhapsody. Yeah. And Rhapsody is like one of the number one grossing musicals films of all time, right, or something, because of how much money it made. But this one didn't try to pretend that it was real, even though it was obviously real. You know what I'm saying? Like Bohemian Rhapsody felt like it was trying to be historical in a different type of way.
Right.
This was more of a character piece, I felt, and it allowed for the fantasy to come in. His songs weren't presented chronologically. Like, I Want Love was what he sings with his family. Remember, he sings with his family, I want love, and they're all just a different kind. Oh, there we go. Now, I wondered if I would be the first one to break.
Yeah.
But that song was written in 2001, he was a child. So they sort of let it – basically, I think that there's going to be a Rocketman Broadway play. And it
oh, they set it like up perfectly. This could go onto stage. Oh my gosh, and I would see it immediately. No, I think the reason I'm comparing it so much, other than the fact that they're so close together, they deal with a lot of the same themes. You know,
yeah.
There's addiction, mental health, homosexuality, and fame, obviously, and what fame can do to somebody. So, you know, them dealing with all of these similar themes. But I just think that Rocket Man was able to take so many different aspects and blend them together really seamlessly. The musical aspect, the fantasy aspect, but like they didn't make it a joke and they didn't make it cheesy. It was just, it was real, but also fantasy. Where am I going with this? It's really hard to describe it, but yeah, it was seamless.
I felt like Rhapsody was almost like a recipe of this is how those songs came to be. This is the thing, you know, it was sort of like, oh, We Will Rock You came out of this conversation. And you see, that's what happened. And it was all, you know, and I'm not taking anything away from, I mean, really that Live Aid scene is just brilliant in every single way from Bohemian Rhapsody. And I liked Bohemian Rhapsody. This one I felt gave me a better understanding of the characters that they had. Maybe that was just a script. Maybe it was just that it was more focused on him as opposed to this is his music.
Mm-hmm.
They used his music to tell you about him in a different sort of way, which I appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely think there was a bit of a different POV being portrayed between the two films, which is why I didn't necessarily compare the two when I was watching them. You know, with Bohemian Rhapsody, it really is, as much as it is about Freddie Mercury, it's also about the band and, you know, their friendship and their trajectory creating music, whereas Rocketman definitely is more, I think, of an inside look at Elton John's life. And, you know, unfortunately, Freddie Mercury is not with us anymore, but Elton John was, I guess, very involved in the making of Rocketman. Mm-hmm. I know him and his partner, or husband rather, are listed, I believe, as executive producers on the film.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it just did kind of, I think, offer a bit of more of an emotional insight into his internal life at this time period.
And Bohemian Rhapsody, Freddie Mercury is not with us. The band is with us, and the band had creative control.
Right.
The band had creative control of this story. So Freddie Mercury was not telling his own story. This is their external view of Freddie Mercury, which is different. And again, like, I don't want to spend this whole time of us talking about Bohemian Rhapsody, but I think they're just going to be there's about three of them this year. And then Yesterday comes out in a couple of weeks, which I'm excited about, which is, again, totally different, but another 70s rock icon, 60s, 70s rock icon told through music. It's a big deal right now.
I think what I did during Star is Born is exactly what my personality is, which is I didn't cry at the end. Have you seen A Star is Born?
Yes, I've seen all of them. I love each one of them.
Okay, well, you show me up.
You're going to be our best friend.
And yeah. No, I didn't cry, but then I was in a depression for like 3 days.
Yeah, it's emotional. Let it out. It really is an emotional movie. Oh, all of them are, to be honest. I remember, like, I'm not sure if you've seen or if you even like the 1954 version with Judy Garland, but that one, to me, it's, oh my God, I watched that. I tracked down that movie. Well, actually, I think my mom tracked it down for me, but I had been searching for it for years, and I got it, and we watched it together, and I think I was, must have been 18 at the time, but I, after that movie, again, I cried, but it was more just my heart after watching that movie felt like it was ripped open. Yeah. And then this, the recent one, the Bradley Cooper adaptation, again, I so enjoyed it. I definitely cried, I'm not gonna lie, I did, but it's emotional. Like, you really, I felt anyways, my heart just really went out to them. Mm-hmm. For days after that film, I felt it.
I'm glad you ladies brought this up, because to me, this undid the damage of A Star Is Born. I, you know, without getting into too many details, I have struggled with some pretty deep depression this last year. And A Star Is Born spiraled me for a few days. You know, you talk about how it shook. Now, I loved A Star Is Born, and amazing. I was like, I thought this is a brilliant film.
Yeah.
But it left me destroyed.
Yeah.
This musical, I felt like by the end, helped put back the damage together.
Yeah. You felt the hope.
I felt the hope, and I felt like you gave me a similar situation. I'm not saying the stories are the same at all, but you left me with two people that were both in a very similar way, with Jackson Maine and Elton in this one, and you put John back together. You put Elton John back together by the end of the film, and I was like, oh my gosh, because they do not put Jackson Maine back together.
No.
And so this, like, emotionally, I felt like this one actually undid some of the emotional damage of A Star Is Born.
Well, ever since I saw A Star Is Born in theaters, I've wanted to watch it again, and I actually bought it on Google Play. Or Google Movies, whatever it's called.
Not on disc?
No, I don't have a physical copy. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
But I've literally, to this day, I have not been able to bring myself to watch it. Because I'm just not prepared to be depressed again.
That's okay, because then you can go see Rocket Man.
That's fair.
And
yeah, I'll have to do a back-to-back.
Yeah, you see this and then go see Rocket Man to, like, put it back together, and then and you'll be fine.
That's a good point. I didn't – thanks for bringing that up, Steve. I didn't necessarily think of the two offhand, but it is true. It is a similar story in a way, or at least the two characters walk, I guess, a similar path. And Jackson Maine and Allie's story, again, like, it just sticks with you. Like, you don't forget those characters. I felt – and again, I think it's a testament to both of their performances, but to the story itself, I think – in some ways, not in the specifics, but I think the overarching story of A Star Is Born is somewhat universal in that there's just elements of it, and whether it be the relationship or the career ups and downs, the relationship with your parents, like, there's something in that film that I think hits deep for a lot of people, and it sticks with you. That film, to me, whether the Judy Garland one and the recent one, those are films I think about them, like, frequently. They come into my head and I think about those characters and that story. And, you know, seeing Rocketman, it is sort of life-affirming in a way, you know, watching that film and seeing how he does kind of reach a level of peace and self-acceptance at the end. And as Julie said, you do get this feeling of hope. Like, you walk out of there feeling hopeful for him. And I mean, we're blessed with the fact that it is a true story. So we do get to see that, you know what, Elton John walked this path. He lived it. He went through so much. And now, I mean, to quote the youngins, as they say, is now living his best life.
Yeah.
He's done so much with his life, and he's done a lot of good for a lot of people, and he seems happy, you know, and I think that is part of that feeling, leaving that theater and knowing, wow, you know, he went through a lot, but he's also done a lot of good and continues to do a lot of good.
I think that I just have to start talking about Taron Egerton. Is it Edgerton or Egerton?
It's whatever you want it to be.
Okay, great. He was so incredible. And I'm wondering, I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Sing. I have a young child.
Yes, I have. Okay, I love that film.
Yes.
Oh, Sing is incredible. Taron Egerton played whoever the gorilla was, I can't remember. Oh, Johnny. His name was Johnny in the
film.
Was
he really?
Yes.
And he's so good in
it. He's Johnny. He's incredible. And at the end, he sings, "I'm Still Standing." And I actually thought, this is blasphemous, I know. I thought it was almost better than the original. And I'm wondering if this is what got him the job playing Elton John.
It could have been.
Because he, right? Oh my gosh, his "I'm Still Standing" was so good, and then
it was
here
beautiful,
he is,
yeah,
here he is playing Elton John. But no, besides the fact that he's got an incredible singing voice, he's an incredible actor, and he just embodied it. He killed it.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. I thought that he just dove into this story, but also portraying, you know, such a rock legend so well. It was seamless. He seemed totally natural. And I love that you brought up Sing, because I love that film and he did such an incredible job. I watched an interview with him and he actually mentioned that, you know, singing and music was kind of one of his first loves. He's always been passionate about that. So I wonder if he grew up really being a fan of this kind of genre or this era in music. But regardless, he just did an excellent job.
Yeah, I appreciated the fact that it sort of played to his strengths, which was, you know, it allowed him to be more dramatic. Like his singing, you could make a big deal. Hey, he sounded great. His singing was really good. He did an excellent job. I'm not taking anything away from that. But I felt like the film played more to his dramatic strengths in a lot of ways. Like music was used throughout the film to help tell the story like a Broadway play. And, you know, the scenes that are most memorable to me are like when he's confronting people, or when he's, you know, when he's at the pool. That pool scene destroyed me.
Oh.
And for my next trick, I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah, that was intense. And then that scene just, I think it portrays really well the whole, how do I describe it, where it's really real and deep and dark, but then it turns into that fantasy again, the underwater scene. Was there dancing underwater, or something was going on underwater?
Well, they were all diving in the pool. It looked like it was almost like dancing, but really, I think what was playing out was his
rescue.
His
sorts.
Rescue,
yeah.
But it was sort of it played out almost like a Hollywood musical.
Yeah,
from
some
synchronized swimming type thing.
But that just goes to show, cinematically, oh, it was so incredible. Scenes like that just sort of shows all of its strengths in one.
Did you stay for the credits? Did you see the pictures that they posted up?
Yeah, that was really nice.
So the picture of the floating Elton John, which I did not know was real, where he's, no, you can, Julie whipped out her phone and she immediately started Googling it. What it was is that he kicked his legs out from under him so high that he looked like he's floating.
That's right.
So,
and it was legit. That was real. Yeah.
So when they spoke to him about it afterwards, they said, well, that's how I felt. You know, I felt like I was flying. So although it played out like a fantasy, and it's funny because this was a funny thing. See, again, going back to Bo Rap, I'm sorry, but after Rhapsody, the whole thing was they got this wrong, they got this wrong, they got this wrong.
Yeah.
Everybody argued about which point was which. No one is bringing that up here.
Because Elton John is coming out and saying, this was really close to reality, and this is what we wanted to do with it. And I think that's the difference between having someone involved in it and having someone that's not able to be involved in it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, too, I love about Rocketman kind of, you know, leaning into that fantastical element, is just a great way to portray his emotional inner life. And I think you both mentioned that earlier, you know, as opposed to just kind of a chronological retelling, it hones in more on what he was feeling at that time in a way that, you know, is hard to do sometimes through a film. And I just think they really got that across, you know, specifically some of the scenes that come to mind right off the top, you know, when he is sort of floating on the stage and the whole audience is floating. Another time when he's going through that slew of shows and you just see him whirling around on that piano, totally, you know, kind of disoriented and in this very frenzied kind of state. I really felt that became very clear to the audience what he was kind of going through inside, and using those kind of fantastical elements to show that. It worked beautifully for me. I loved those scenes.
Yeah, there was that balance between whimsical and reality, and you just sort of understood what they were trying to tell you, and I like that.
Yeah, the word whimsical definitely explains it well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you ladies think of the way that his relationship was portrayed, you know, in this particular film? I know that, Jules, you mentioned before about how it'd been banned in Russia due to content. Do you think that our conversation around these things have changed? Do you think that there are, what are the barriers to these things? Why are these things getting banned for a film like this?
Yeah, I was actually really shocked that it was banned. I mean, when I heard that it had been, not banned, but that they had taken scenes out of the movie in Russia, I was expecting it to be really raunchy, and it wasn't. It is no more raunchy than any other movie that you're going to go see. It just so happens that it's a gay scene. And so people are just up in arms, and it's quite sad that that this is still a problem. And so Elton John actually released a statement, which I'll read some or all of really quick if you don't mind. We reject in the strongest possible terms the decision to censor Rocketman for the Russian market, a move we were unaware of until today. Paramount Pictures has been brave and bold partners in allowing us to create a film which is a true representation of Elton's extraordinary life, warts and all. That the local distributor has found it necessary to edit out certain scenes, denying the audience the opportunity to see the film as it was intended, is a sad reflection of the divided world we still live in and how it can still be so cruelly unaccepting of love between two people. We believe in building bridges and open dialogue, and will continue to push for the breaking down of barriers until all people are heard equally across the world. So that was quite a strong statement, and I appreciated a lot of what was said in there about building bridges and breaking down barriers and things like that. And I think that this movie is sort of meant to do that. So censoring it is pretty detrimental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. And thank you for reading that statement, Julie, too. I think that's really important to acknowledge. And I think it is a good and strong statement as well. I felt the same way that you did. I mean, I didn't feel that the scenes were any more or less gratuitous, shall we say, than any other film out there. Mm-hmm. So, of course, clearly, I think it is due to the fact that it is a gay couple as opposed to, you know, a couple that's heterosexual. But I'm glad that the statement's been released, and, you know, hopefully this, you know, pushes us forward a little bit more in terms of representing people and their relationships, you know, accurately on screen.
It was interesting, you know, with all the kerfuffle. That's my old man word for the day. I went there and, you know, you hear, R-rated. And I had somebody tell me, it's really graphic. And I'm like, okay, you know, but for whatever, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual sex, if it's graphic, it's like, okay, well, all right, let's see what happens. It really wasn't. It was a tad more graphic than what you might see on a soap opera or on an evening, you know, show. Like there really was, I thought there'd be things hanging out all over the place, and there wasn't. It was a tender scene. It was actually a very tender scene.
It was quite nice, actually. I mean, they really well.
Really?
Let's get into how much I enjoyed these scenes. No, it just. I think that it was at least the way that it was portrayed. The one scene that I'm thinking of was one of Elton John's first experiences with that sort of thing, and so I think it was kind of oddly innocent. And you go.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I felt that there was, again, as you mentioned, I think that that was a very new kind of experience for him. I think one of his first kind of long-term relationships as well. So you really do get that sense of excitement and almost innocence and newness to it for him. And your heart really goes out to him as you watch that relationship, unfortunately, kind of devolve in a way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, initially I felt as a viewer, you know, I felt so excited for him, and just that those feelings of a new love or a new attraction, they really got that across, and I thought in a really good way.
I was just talking earlier with someone about Heath Ledger, and I was just thinking of like Brokeback Mountain. That was 20 years ago now. And at the time that was, you know, utterly shocking. And nowadays, that's just the stories that are being told.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, this is absolutely for representation's sake. Like, I saw this film and I thought this was great. Mm-hmm. I thought it was well told. Whether it's heterosexual or homosexual sex, a sex scene that is just shooting for graphicness for the sake of graphicness is totally useless in a film for those things. But this, you're right, this actually added to the story
absolutely
in many ways. So I thought it was quite effective in that sense.
You don't see that very often, the fact that, you know, it's not just selling sex, it's contributing to the story. So
it doesn't actually surprise me when I hear these stories, because there are a lot of countries that here in the West, there are lots of people that would still be concerned about such things anyway. But I mean, the censorship is different because the idea of how we tell our stories is different, and representation is huge right now. But in a lot of other nations as well, that's still sort of like, okay, well, you can tell a certain story within certain boundaries.
Right. How does that work? Because they did it without telling them or their consent. So how do they, like, mess with a piece of art?
It's not theirs to
mess with. You know what I mean? I mean, we don't know the details of how it went down, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't answer that. But I mean, I hear these stories all the time of this movie went in, but they had to cut out this shot or that shot, or they had to tone down this scene or cut out this thing.
Right.
And that's not uncommon. That's not uncommon.
It's one of those things where it's not surprising, but it's always disappointing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that there are still, places that feel the need to do that. But yeah, again, with you on the fact, I wasn't totally surprised, but it's still disappointing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, and too, and I mean, obviously this is pure speculation, but I would imagine that censorship is viewed differently in different places. So for example, whereas we have a certain understanding of what censorship is, censorship is bad because freedom of speech, right? That's where we would land. But for other countries, they would not view it that way. They would view it as protectionistic. The idea that this country's, whatever these countries would view that as a threat, you know, in this particular conference. Anyway, and again, purely speculation, but there's probably another way. In many ways, I probably think they probably think they're doing something to help their country.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say that too, just because I remember back in Ottawa, I used to sort of volunteer intern with the Canadian Film Institute, and I so vividly remember this conversation. I can't even remember who said this, but I think it was watching The Adjuster by Adam Egoyan, and one character in it actually works for the Ontario Censorship Board, or I can't quite remember the correct title, but he was talking about, you know, the notion of censorship, and it exists on a scale, right? You know, I think to some extent censorship can be helpful. I think establishing boundaries can be very helpful. We were having this discussion, and the gentleman who worked there, he said, "Oh yeah, I absolutely agree." He's like, "I worked there for a bit. You would not believe some of the things that get sent to us that we have to censor." I think for me, when I say, you know, hearing about, sort of modern films or Hollywood films getting censored abroad, for me, particularly in the case of Rocketman, when, you know, having seen the full film and seeing the scenes and knowing that the scenes aren't necessarily gratuitous in any way, they do kind of serve the story, they do get across a very important aspect of Elton's life, and knowing that they are being censored abroad, I think specifically because they are a same-sex couple, it's disappointing in that regard. But I'm totally with you in the sense that, you know, there are certain times when establishing boundaries and censorship can be helpful, for sure.
Yeah,
I can see that. You know, let's talk a little bit about how they've developed his character and how he was involved. I mean, he doesn't have a writing credit, but certainly he was involved in the film. It's really quite a character piece of a man who's has limitless fame bestowed upon him in many ways. One of the things I thought was interesting is the film begins when he's first playing in the background band and that in the clubs.
Mm-hmm.
He's told that you have to kill the person you are to become the person you want to be. Is that true? Do you think even he believed that by the end of the film? Like, what do you think about that sort of idea?
You know, that's such an interesting question. And I think that is sort of a very important line in this film. And I would be really curious to know if that is something that Elton John to this day still thinks about, or if he applies that in his career and his creative projects. But yeah, I mean, I don't know that anyone would necessarily have the answer to that. I think there's a lot to unpack there. But again, that was certainly one of the most intriguing lines I felt in the film. And I think that it is interesting starting off, or, you know, earlier on in the film, hearing this line and then going forward in his journey and seeing everything that he goes through, from, you know, the great things in terms of creating unforgettable music and iconic music, and also kind of the tougher times in his life, you know, dealing with substance dependence and, you know, the kind of issues with his family. I think that there is such an interesting counterpoint to that line. And then the scene where you see him walking into that support group meeting and he's in full costume, you know, and he starts to actually remove those layers as he goes through his story. And I mean, I could be assuming, but assuming that as he goes through telling his story, he feels a sense of healing towards the end. I think that there's definitely kind of an interesting balance between that line and watching him shed those layers later on.
Yeah, I love the visual imagery of that costume when he walks in, you know, the orange angelic devil. And then he removes the horns and he's talking more about himself as a child, and then he removes the hat, and he, you know, just slowly, this is who, getting to the core of who he is, you know. I love when films do that visually.
Yeah, and then even when they kind of, I think they sort of replay the same scene again closer to the end, where he's walking into the rehab facility in that sort of sequins devil costume, where then you see the feathers and the gems and sequins falling off of his costume as he's storming in. And I felt that sort of angel and devil comparison, and how he's shedding his former self and finding his true self. And he leaves rehab in sort of this nice white outfit. Maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into that, but that's sort of what I caught from it. But in terms of your original question about killing who you are to become the person that you want to become, is that sort of what the quote was? I kind of struggled with this one, and I still do, because I don't know. And I think that it seemed like he sort of struggled with it as well. Is it sort of becoming who you are truly meant to be, or is it sort of masking who you were? Because we see a lot of, and this was like really touching for me as well, and I'm sure a lot of us who, the struggles that he had with his parents growing up and how that shaped him. And then he sort of did start to mask the way that he felt with the costumes. We even see the scene where, I believe it was the scene he jumped into the pool and he had to get his stomach pumped. And then the next night he's on stage with that big smile in the Dodgers sequins outfit playing Rocket Man. And it's just this huge difference. And I think there's also a scene where he's sitting in front of a mirror, just staring at himself. And then he puts on that big fake smile.
The sunglasses.
It's a mask. You know what I mean? So it's really difficult for me to answer this question, because I don't know if it's becoming who you're supposed to be or if it's just hiding who you were.
No, I love the points that you raised, because I think that showing, again, specifically with that scene with the support group, and he's coming in wearing his costume and he slowly sheds each layer as he goes forward and, you know, supposedly kind of coming back to himself, or at least feeling at peace with himself and who he is and his journey up to that point. Because I think something that came across a lot to me during those support group scenes is a sense of, you know, potentially shame, you know, potentially regret, but there's also pride and there's love there as well. So I think it is such an interesting question. It's a beautiful line for sure. And I think showing that as the film goes on through his costumes, and of course, specifically with the shedding of that costume, is a good shorthand for, you know, kind of visually representing his journey to acceptance, hopefully. But I think it is such an interesting question, because there is something to be said for the fact that you know, he does come back to himself or comes to a place of acceptance. But I think that coming to that place of acceptance, he has sort of come to a place where he accepts all sides of himself. Mm-hmm. You know, we see him as a child and, you know, kind of who he was then. We see him throughout his life. And, you know, being a performer is part of who he is. Being, you know, such a brilliant creative mind is part of who he is. You know, the costumes are all part of that. I really liked that feeling of towards the end, I walked away with the feeling of he reached a certain level of self-acceptance for all the sides of him and all the parts of him, even the parts that may be different or maybe, you know, that he may have struggled with in the past. But I think at the end of the day, we walk away feeling he's kind of reached a new level of peace with himself. And whether that means he killed his old self, I don't necessarily, again, I don't know if anyone could ever answer that question, but I would say I felt anyways he reached a new level of self-understanding, self-awareness, and peace because of it.
Well, at one point he actually says, I don't know what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having another scene, he actually says, you know, people don't pay to see Reggie. They pay to see Elton John, you know?
Yes.
And it's like, I think he's really lost a piece of his soul. Or rather sold it away to try and find something because he lost it as a child, you know, and the beauty. I mean, I ugly cried, and I'm alone in this movie, not the only one in the theater. I'm just sitting by myself, ugly crying at this scene where he's standing in, oh my gosh, he's actually doing therapy. The whole movie is doing therapy. And the scene at the end where he comes face to face with child Elton.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the child says, hi, Reggie. And he says, no, I haven't gone by that by some time. I'm Elton now.
Mm-hmm.
He still doesn't say, you're right, I've always been Reggie. There is a part of him that is. But when he hugs himself, there's this recognition of his of accepting all aspects of his story
mm-hmm.
in such a beautiful way.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is just incredible to me. And I'm sure it has something to do with the fact that I'm in therapy. But anyway, but this fact that he is there, that it's I sort of rewatch the film in my mind and see him running from the damage of his childhood and trying to create something new, actually killing who he was to try and create something new, but just not knowing what that was. And then when those things come together, oh my gosh, this moment was like, that's why I think he can go out and sing I'm Still Standing in his white outfit and they can right. recreate the famous music video, right? Because this scene has brought him back holistically. He's reclaimed a part of his soul that he was afraid to as himself. His stories come together.
Yeah.
It's and that line, when are you going to hug me? Oh my gosh. And I don't just mean at the beginning where he's asking his father. I mean at the end when he's essentially asking himself.
Right.
And I think it's Bernie that comes in too that says, you're not scared of who you've become. You're scared to feel again or something to that effect. You need to remember who you are and be okay with it.
Yeah, I think that this whole... The movie sort of was hit home for me, and I think it's something that we all need to remember, especially if we've gone through difficult times when we were younger, is that I think a lot of us just try to mask it.
Mm.
We try to mask it, and we try to, like what Elton John was, he physically put on the costumes, and he changed his appearance. He took the drugs because he didn't want to feel the pain anymore, you know? He had a really rough childhood.
Mm.
He had, from what it looked like, a father who didn't really love him, a mother who just tore him down. And he must have had a lot of willpower to continue with his dream because he got no support from anybody. And he was a child prodigy on the piano, wouldn't you say? Like, he was a genius.
Yeah.
Is a genius.
He's just one of those people you kind of look at and you feel like you operate on a different plane of reality. Like, you just have a creative mind that, you know, you're really touched by greatness in a way, or, you know, you're really gifted in that way. Absolutely. And you're right in saying that, you know, as a kid, certainly in the film, definitely doesn't seem that that was ever fostered or celebrated or encouraged at all. So it really is quite, it's really inspiring and encouraging to watch him push through that and really follow that.
Yeah, because I feel like anybody else would be so discouraged and kind of take it to heart. Like, oh, no, maybe I'm not good enough to do this. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And you wouldn't blame them for it, too. I mean, oh, my goodness. No. Some of the scenes when he was a kid were just gut-wrenching. It's funny, too, as you mentioned, Steve, at the end of the film, just, you know, sobbing because I actually watched this film with my family, my parents, my sister and I. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the film, my mom was just gobsmacked. Like we all loved the film, but she was just staring at the screen, like mouth wide open. And we asked her, we said, well, what do you think? She's like, you know what? I'm just stunned. Like there's no really other way to put it. Like you're just stunned watching how this young boy, you know, kind of went through so much as a child, pushed through that, was able to follow his dream and, you know, give the world such great art. But you know, you see that those beginnings, that foundation, that childhood, everything that he went through then, you know, it did impact him in his life as an adult as well.
In all honesty, this was one of those films that sort of shook me. And that doesn't happen very often. And maybe other people will watch it and say, oh yeah, that was great. The tunes were awesome. And he was really good. And man, he sounds like Elton John and stuff like that. But I mean, I really connected with his journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was wondering, you know, we sort of touched on it already, but what you ladies thought of the portrayal of mental health in this film? This is something we've started to talk more about in recent years, more publicly, more often. But there's this in a lot of ways felt like an exploration into how to deal with our past, our pain, the traumas we've lived. So I was just wondering what you thought of that.
I think it's a, you know, kind of along the same veins as what I was saying before, how you can be affected by your childhood, and how, you know, masking it and trying to numb the pain only works for so long. Do you know what I mean? There will come a point where you have to kind of come face to face with it and try to work through it, which is difficult. And I think that we sort of see Elton John. It's hard to describe if he just kept pushing against it, but then finally coming to terms with it. And it almost seems like you could see pride in him when he was walking into the facility. I mean, he was determined, but he still had that mask on. And then that's why we saw him sort of shedding that cover. And then slowly working through his issues. I think it was a really good and important portrayal of mental health because we saw it from the beginning. We saw how it manifested itself. And thankfully, we saw how it could be conquered.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And thank you for raising that too, Steve, because I think that is such an important part of this film. You know, at the end of the day, it is sort of a representation or a telling of someone's life. But on top of that, I think it is so important that they included this element of his life. I think that they portrayed it, I would say, in a very compassionate way. I think in a very empathetic way. I think any viewer that would watch this film would walk away with, I mean, hopefully, I would say a compassionate view of him and extend that and extrapolate that to, you know, other individuals that they may come across in their life who are, you know, struggling with perhaps their own substance dependence issues or, you know, anything that they may be experiencing. I think it's so important to put the individual first and, you know, really realize that, you know, we're all human. Our experiences are all different. And someone who is going through this has value and, you know, their experiences are valid and we should approach it from first and foremost an empathetic and compassionate stance. And I think the film did that, at least to me, it came across that way. I'm not sure if someone else who may be going through, I would say perhaps a closer journey to what Elton went through, they may have a different viewpoint. But from my perspective, it seemed to handle it, I would say, in an empathetic way.
I actually appreciated the way it ended. My one criticism of the film might be that the turn was quite abrupt, even though he was in therapy the whole time. Like, he just sort of, at the end, it sort of came together. Mm-hmm. But maybe it didn't, and maybe if I see it again, I won't feel that way. I sort of wondered that, but...
I hear you. It's one of those things where, you know, I think realistically, I'm sure his journey was perhaps longer or may still be ongoing, and that's okay too. But I think for the sake of the film structure, they did kind of sort of end it very abruptly in that sense.
Yeah, I loved again that final therapy session and all the voices that were there. And this film kind of, you know, I mean, this is not an uncommon theme, especially in recent years, but this idea that he's sort of finding out who he is, finding his voice, finding his own voice, which is ironic because he didn't write any of the words. Somebody said that too. I think there's a line about how personal they are, and they're really not his words, but... But he brings such life to these songs that he's co-written with Bernie. But I mean, in that final scene when they're standing around the quietest therapy room I've ever seen in my life, because I think the only person that talks is the therapist. But you see the characters from his past there, and they're still speaking the same way. Mom doesn't show up at the end and say, "I was wrong" the whole time, because that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
You know, Dad doesn't show up and say, "Whoops, yeah, loved your brothers better than you." He doesn't show up and do that. They're treating him the same way, and his response is, "I hope you can forgive me because I realize that's what we need to do now."
Mm-hmm.
And that to me was such a bold statement, because I mean, it's one thing to say you're going to forgive someone, but he, in that statement, "I hope you can forgive me," he's asking forgiveness to the people he's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But, and he does say that's what we need to do now, but he doesn't say, he doesn't demand it of them in that scene. He gives it to them, but he does not demand it. He doesn't say, "Mom, you owe me an apology." He just takes ownership for his own actions and then forgives them for theirs. I'm like, I'm a pastor, baby. Like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, holy crap, that's the most divine forgiveness I've seen in film in ages. I think it was just so powerful for me.
Powerful.
And I was sitting there like going, wow. And it just made me think of like, who are the voices in our lives? And I'm not asking you to spill your guts. That's not what I'm saying, but
this could easily turn into a deep therapy session now.
So tell me more, ladies. No. Who are the voices in our lives that would be in that room with us?
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to say, and what would we say to them in that case? Would we have that strength? Sorry, go ahead, Julie.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think that's – I'm so glad you brought that up. That's such a beautiful point. And I think that is why so many people who watch this film I think that's why it resonates so from such an emotional and personal place for a lot of the viewers of this film, because that is such – I would say, as you said, a unique scene. I don't know that I've seen it handled in that way in a film for quite some time. And I think that really resonates with people, because they're absolutely, I think every person that goes in to watch that, there's at least one voice or perhaps many voices in their life that they may be kind of imagining how that would play out or at least able to identify with that kind of situation.
Yeah, and you know what is as off? You know, it's funny. Like, as awful as his childhood truly was, and I'm not making excuses for any of this, it wasn't demonstrative in the sense that is, you know, they don't portray his father as beating him in the middle of the night or something like this. Is just constant mental anguish.
Mm-hmm.
This is emotional abuse.
Yeah.
So I mean, we see the effects of, you know, drip, 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 drip. And just the damage it does to this poor child, and then his mother, and all these things sort of play in. So I mean, it's not like on screen that it's unrelatable either. If you haven't been through incredible abuse, and I'm not saying that this is acceptable in any stretch. That don't hear that in my what I'm saying. What I'm just saying is it felt so real and much more common. you know, I could relate to these things. Sorry.
You hit on an excellent point. I think, again, it did feel very real. Those childhood scenes, it didn't. And I don't know if it's also how they shot it, too. I found the scenes in his childhood home very interesting to watch. Something in how they shot those scenes really got across that sense of loneliness. Like, there was just such a coldness and a loneliness that I think all the characters felt. You know, I think that he absolutely felt that. And, you know, being such a young child, like, it was honestly quite devastating to watch those scenes. But I felt that all the characters in that household felt a disconnect with one another. The only exception may be, you know, the grandmother, who I absolutely adored. I felt with the mom, I really feel that a lot of the kind of anger and negativity that she was giving off was perhaps stemming from the loneliness that she felt, and perhaps also from the father as well. I do think we spend a bit more time with the mother, so I felt that I could perhaps read a little bit more into what she was feeling than the father, which could be speaking towards the fact maybe his father was indeed more distant. It certainly comes across that way. But absolutely, there's just a realism to that. When you're in that house, you feel that loneliness.
I liked, as I said before, that he owns his own actions. They don't let him completely off the hook. That would be the temptation too. Oh, he had a bad childhood. Oh, he had these things. No, he owns, he accepts his past, forgives his past, but owns his present. In a beautiful way, like, not like, hey, everything I did was fine, but just sort of this, you know what, this is, like, I need to change. He actually says, the opening, one of the things he says, they said, why are you here? He says, I want to get better. And I just really appreciate the phone. You know, it's funny, I just saw Dark Phoenix, and I'm not going to compare the films because they're totally different, but they both have themes of mental abuse and forgiveness. And it's just done so badly in that film. Last week's podcast was all about this. And it's just done so poorly. And this way, just sort this film allows it to be somewhat nuanced in a beautiful way. I just found it really powerful.
I read a few. I mean, the film is doing well, and it's getting really good reviews. Rocket Man, that is, not Dark Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix is doing neither, actually.
But I read a couple of reviews saying, like, oh, you know, it was a musical. I was really disappointed. And I'm thinking, if that's all you took from it, I'm just so disappointed in humanity. Like, this movie is so important. It really is. And everything that it does well. And yes, cinematically, musically, incredible. But it's the themes and it's the way that they portray the struggle that is really just hits the nail on the head. And it's not only an entertaining story, but like, who didn't, at least out of the three of us, who didn't just look inside themselves and look into your past and see, you know, and that's why I think that, like, I was tearing up in the movie. I think, Steve, you were saying the same thing. How can you not be so affected by this film?
Yeah,
absolutely. I really like that, you know, again, I felt that it did portray mental health and mental illness and, you know, in a very, I would say anyways, a compassionate and empathetic way. But I also like that it really demonstrated, I felt anyways towards the end, sort of self-acceptance as well. And I think that does come across, Steve, in some of the things that you mentioned earlier, you know, getting closure from someone that you may never verbally get confirmed closure from, and sort of taking, I guess, ownership over your own actions, sort of accepting what you can control or take responsibility for, and also accepting the things that you can't. I think it really takes someone who has done the work, who is committed to, you know, self-acceptance, to be able to do that. And I really love that the film kind of gets that, first of all, gets that across, but second of all, gets it across that many people can walk many different paths, and all those paths are valid, and all those paths have value and contribute and bring goodness, you know. Elton is that little boy who is, you know, a musical prodigy, but he is also someone who is creative and loves to wear these crazy costumes and loves to perform. You know, he is someone who is, I would say, to some extent, a romantic at heart. You know, I think that at the end of the film, I felt he, not only did he accept all those different sides of himself and recognize that, you know, this is who I am. I'm many different things. And that's a good thing. I think that the film really, I think, allows people to accept that within themselves. You know, we're not all just A or B, you know, we can be all these different things, and that's a good thing.
Jumping off that, what do you think it means to be loved properly?
That was that phone call with his mom. Just, oh, that was a 1-2 punch right in the feels. Yeah. You know, that's a great question. I think it's a huge question, you know, and I think that that question may be different for everyone. I think everyone, to some extent, accepts and gives love in different ways. And that's something I feel that we all learn at some point in our life, that, you know, how one person may define being properly loved is different from the next person. But I mean, at the end of the day, I do feel that being loved properly is someone who is able to accept all the many sides of you, and value all of those sides, and is able to, you know, love and support you in the ways that are healthiest for you. And is also able to, I guess, communicate that and receive that in their own right as well.
I'm looking at Julie to see if she's going to answer that or no, but she's smiling at me.
No, I was, I agree. And there's not much else I really want to say about, I don't want to talk about love, okay? No, I'm just kidding. No, I was actually just going to kind of take it in a different direction, which is the love that I think was always there from the beginning, which was with Bernie. Mm-hmm. He always had that support. He always had a support system in Bernie, and that friendship was always there from the start, which was great. And I think that that's one thing that kind of kept Elton going this whole time. And you were mentioning that his words of his, the lyrics of his songs are so powerful and seem to kind of line up with his life, even though he didn't write them. But I think that Elton and Bernie were pretty close, and you know, they experienced a lot together. And I think that that's sort of why, you know, they were sort of going through similar things at the same time, or he would see what Elton was going through and incorporate that into his lyrics, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you brought that up, because, I mean, their friendship throughout the film is so beautiful, and they do have a deep love for each other. They have a deep love and a deep support system as well. You really get the sense that they truly do care about each other, and they go through a lot together. And I think it is something to be said, not only from an artistic point of view, but from like a love and an emotional point of view, the fact that, you know, as you mentioned, Steve, that some people say, oh, his lyrics are so personal, but he didn't necessarily write them. But I think there's something to be said for that, you know, that they have such a close connection. They do deeply love and care for each other, and that Bernie can write these incredible lyrics. Elton can write the music, and they complement each other so well. And he can perform them in such a way that people all over the world and for decades have come to really hold those songs dear and feel very impacted by those songs.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up too, because, you know, that is a different aspect. Is a lot of times, you know, it even talks about him and David at the end is loving him properly. Mm-hmm. But Bernie does love him properly.
Yeah.
You know, they're just not in a romantic relationship. So what is that type of healing love that does support it? And Bernie is a great example. Bernie's the one voice at that final circle that is not there to condemn him. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all standing there and they're all condemning him. And Bernie is just there. He sort of calls him out And but it's a different type. It's not your, it's not a you are bad thing. It's you're afraid, but you know, let's come, it's to draw him out.
Well, and didn't they say something about how they've never had like a proper fight?
Yeah, they clearly fought a lot, and I'm assuming it's about over music, but but actually, you know, again, I googled the reality of the fantasy film Rocket Man, right? And one of the things they said was that they still claim that they've never had a fight, but they didn't actually break up either. Is one of the things that they said, that in that in the film, they, Bernie and him did not separate in the midst of all this. That was one of the dramatic dramatic license things.
Well, he said he needed a break on the plane.
Yeah, and I don't. Well, I don't know if that again, like, who knows where the lines are blurred and whatnot. Maybe he did need a break, but he came back. But he didn't. He didn't abandon him
in his time of need. Like, that was kind of at the peak of his addiction and sort of low point, I think. But I just wanted to speak on the fact that the lyrics and how connected they were and what was going on in Elton's life is you can really see it in his lyrics. I'm Still Standing has a couple of really interesting lyrics that I think speak to the whole putting on a mask and also speaking to his past about how he didn't have that support system. And I'm Still Standing, he says, "You'll wind up like the wreck you hide behind that mask you use." And then it says, "The threats you made were meant to cut me down." So it's, I mean, Bernie knew, man. He knew what was going on.
Bernie knew what's up.
Regardless of the fact that Elton didn't write it, it's, you know, there's some lyrics. They're good.
There's some stuff.
So glad that both of you raised so many great points, particularly around, you know, the notion of, you know, his journey and, you know, his struggles, but ultimately his, you know, self-acceptance. And that's a journey in and of itself as well. You know, it's, I think self-acceptance takes time. And I think it is, that's its own path in its own right too. But no, I think you guys brought up some excellent points.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I well, as much fun as a conversation about this can be. I do think we should start to wrap up, because otherwise, yes, I think it's going to be a long, long time.
Oh, you know what I will say?
I've been waiting the whole podcast to do that. Just want to say.
I will just say super quick, you know, I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but my Elton John, at least, you know, my first sort of experience with Elton John is probably, "Can You Feel the Love Tonight?" You know, that sort of vibe. It's fascinating. It really is fascinating to go back and not only listen to music that is still incredible and relevant today, but to see what Elton John was going through back then, because he was such a sort of wholesome family name when I was younger. And just seeing the stuff he went through, it's just very, very interesting.
Yeah.
That is a really good point. Sorry, Sue, I didn't mean to cut you
off.
No, go. That's a great point, because kind of like you, I grew up with my parents. Well, my parents, first of all, love music. And so I grew up listening to all sorts of decades. I mean, from like 40s big band jazz to like 80s pop, you know, we listened to it all. So I was familiar as a kid with Elton John just by, I guess, through the fact that I hear my parents playing his music. But again, The Lion King, that whole soundtrack for me was huge. I was kind of the peak target for that movie when it came out. But it's funny, after watching the film, and I actually did go back and listen to The Lion King soundtrack, you know, and it feels so Elton, like his voice is so strong in those songs, but it did kind of make me step back and appreciate the wide breadth of music he's created throughout his career. I mean, some of the songs, even within the film itself, sound so different genre-wise and thematically, but whenever you hear an Elton John song, you know it's Elton John, because his voice is so distinct, and, you know, I find a lot of his songs kind of blend many different genres. Yeah. So even though he's had such a really interesting career and done so many different things, there's sort of almost a thread running between them all. And you can kind of always, you can always appreciate it and be like, "Oh yeah, that's Elton," you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, he sort of spans different generations What am I even saying? But, like, you know, he did
You're making yourself sound really old when you use words like spinning. I am.
But what was the name of the song he did in memoriam for Princess Diana?
Oh, Candle in the Wind.
So Candle in the Wind. I mean, Candle in the Wind in the 90s was about Princess Diana, but wheel it back a little bit. It was originally about Marilyn Monroe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you find out that's a remake. And then you realize that, like, there was this whole other Elton, you know?
Well, if you keep reeling it back, I mean, he's quite old. Originally, it was about Cleopatra. And before that, it was originally Candle in the Pyramid was the title, but they worked for that.
I'd listen to that song, too, to be honest.
Like a candle in the pyramid.
I think this is the first musical podcast I've ever been on, and I am loving it.
You should be lucky you didn't get me going.
I've tried so hard to get Julie going in this one. Anyway.
I read the lyrics. I didn't sing them. You're welcome.
I'll play the cowbell. I'll be the backup. Yes.
You're just the person we've been looking for.
I got a fever. Anyway. Okay, now we're reeling it in. Yeah. Let's screen it or skip it. Rocket Man, screen it or skip it.
You have to screen it. And I'm talking go to the theater, live the full fantasy. There's literally nothing else that I can say. Just go immediately.
I'm 100% with Julie on that. Go to the theater, enjoy it, immerse yourself in it. You know, I think that there's something to be said that the film has, you know, some really high highs and some really low lows. But at the end of the day, you walk out of there feeling, I would say, a sense of joy in a way, but also a sense of understanding. And I think that's really important because ultimately this film is fantastical. The music is amazing. You know, we're looking at such a larger than life musical icon. But at the end of the day, I think you walk away with a different notion of understanding and empathy. And that's so important.
Yeah, I think if you really want to see, if you're looking for a film that affirms the nature of forgiveness and the power that it can do to bring healing, there is Dark Phoenix in theaters now. But don't see that.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. I said, you guys.
That episode aired last week. They know I said don't
go. Okay.
No, I think it's a fantastic film. And not just because, hey, I liked the music. You know, there's some great musical numbers and it's beautifully shot. But it is a touching, beautiful film that uses music to inform a story, mm-hmm. In a way that is almost classic Hollywood in my mind, a classic Hollywood musical using but taking songs. Yeah, I know that song. Yeah, okay, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. Yeah, okay, that's great. I like that song, but it brings such meaning to the story they're trying to tell, which I think is really, really well done.
Yeah, and I really, really like what Jolie said. That you almost do leave with a sense of hope,
yeah.
Even though you just experienced some serious darkness. Elton John did it, you know, he went through it and he came out on the other side and he's still to this day killing it. You know what I mean? So, there's definitely some things that you're going to probably realize about your life and maybe you are in a dark place, but, there is hope.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's a great film, and I think we all made that pretty clear when we started this how much we enjoyed this film. So this was not a spoiler at all.
I'm gonna see it again, and if I can't, I'm gonna buy it regardless. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Same. Yep.
Yeah, I that's high praise, and I would definitely do the same.
Purchasing movies today? No way.
I still buy discs.
Me too.
Thank you, Jolie. Thank you.
You know what? I've been trying to get rid of the clutter. So I'm doing the Google movies and I'm sorry, okay?
Yeah,
That's totally fair.
No, I still do purchase them though.
Yeah, I was going to say, as long as you're renting or purchasing them, that's totally cool. Yes.
Yeah, no, see, she's responding to me there, Jolie, because I'm shaking my head in shame at her and wagging my finger ferociously. Anyway, ladies, thank you so much for coming on. This has been so much fun, and I really appreciate all your input and thought.
Yeah, this has been great. Thank you.
This has been so much fun. Thank you both for having me on.
You're both welcome at any time to come back on. I really appreciate this. For you at home, a reminder, you can find us where any podcasts are available. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud. You can find us via Stitcher on your Alexa device. If you go to the podcast page on screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, which are small group questions that you might inspire conversation where you are, right? Should you choose to see the film with some friends on your own. We will be back next week with Toy Story 4, actually with you. You're back. But ladies, thank you so much. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.